This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, we're having Project 523, the secret Chinese military program that led to a Nobel Prize. But first, the forecast for today is for blue skies. Though perhaps not where you live. I'm talking about the skies of Pluto. The blue color of the dwarf planet's atmospheric hazes was captured for the first time by the New Horizons spacecraft last week. So what gives Pluto skies that bright blue hue? My next guest expands on this story and other selected short subjects in science. It's Rachel Feldman. She's a writer for the Washington Post Speaking of Science blog and regular here. Welcome back, Rachel.
Thanks for having me, Ira.
So, blue skies. I'm going to sing that song. Nothing but... Over Pluto.
Really gorgeous image from the New Horizons flyby. They're starting to get some of the more high-resolution images and color data that they didn't prioritize right after the flyby. And an image that they got a hold of this week is a color version of this really beautiful atmospheric halo around Pluto. And in color, it's very blue. For the same reason that Earth's sky looks blue, the particles in the atmosphere are small enough to scatter blue light in this very attractive way. And what's also cool about the latest flyby images is that they are seeing exposed water ice on Pluto as opposed to nitrogen ice. You know, this is frozen H2O that's showing on the surface and only in some places. So they're really curious about, you know, what might make these patches of water ice show up in some areas and not in others.
It's interesting that they never thought that Pluto would have a blue sky until they...
Right. Well, you know, you just don't really think about it. But, you know, it's just physics and the particles are the right size for it. So
we have another answer to the question, why is the sky blue, when people ask that question. All right. Let's talk now about a Michigan farmer getting a big surprise in his soy field.
Yeah, so a farmer out in Michigan was doing some digging in his soy field, and he and a friend pulled up what they thought might be a bent signpost covered in mud, and it turned out to be a piece of a mammoth that died thousands of years ago. And basically, this is exciting because, first of all, most of the finds in that area are mastodons, not mammoths. Mammoths are more closely related to modern elephants. And it was also fairly complete. It wasn't a total skeleton, but, you know, in terms of random mammoths that you find in the middle of fields, it had a lot of bones. And another exciting thing is that scientists from the University of Michigan, after racing to get it out of the ground because the farmer could only give them one day before he needed to get back to working in the field, they noticed signs that it had been butchered by humans, if not actually killed by them, and that the carcass had been stored in a lake to preserve the meat. They've seen signs of this behavior in other sites nearby. So there's this growing body of evidence that these early humans were butchering mammoths and also kind of refrigerating them.
So they found the leftovers.
Yeah.
From a meal. That is very interesting. Is it rare to find a woolly mammoth in that part of the country?
It's happened before. They're definitely in the dozens that have been found. But what's cool is that the farmer did end up deciding to donate the specimen. And that's great because without researchers having access to the bones, this really would have been the end of the story. No one ever would have been able to conclude much about it or the people who interacted with the mammoth at all. But now different scientists will have the chance to look at the remains and analyze the way they were found. And we might actually get some cool history out of it.
Yeah, because we don't think when we think about our continent, we don't think about these things walking around.
Right. Well, but, you know, that up north was pretty cold at the time, and there were plenty of giant furry things there.
So. World's first refrigerated mammoth. Now a story of great athleticism in fish.
Yeah, this new study that came out basically says that fish are the best athletes of the animal kingdom by at least one metric. And it's that fleet fish like trout, salmon, and tuna, the ones you think of as being fast swimmers, they have a mechanism to get oxygen into their bloodstream that's 50% times more effective than in humans.
Wow.
And it's because their hemoglobin is more sensitive to changes in pH. And the overall effect is just that they are really good at oxygenating themselves. And as anyone who runs will know, that's really important in endurance and speed. And apparently in areas of low oxygenated water, they can double or even triple the amount of oxygen that they are, you know, getting per, you know, heartbeat or whatever. So essentially, fish are just really, really good at sprints and marathons, and the rest of the animal kingdom just can't measure up.
Wow. We never thought about that. You know, better than a horse and things like that. Now you have this last story about a special Halloween burger that might give you a sort of a fright after you eat it.
Yes. So a lot of people online have been announcing that the Burger King Whopper, Halloween Whopper, which has a black bun, has been turning their poop green, very green, really, really green. And, you know, I was curious about what might be causing that. And, you know, all Burger King will say is that the bun is flavored and dyed with A1 steak sauce, and A1 steak sauce certainly doesn't make your poop green. We know that in Japan, the black bun was made with bamboo charcoal, which also wouldn't make your poop green, but they're apparently not using the same ingredients. So there are three possibilities. It's either because of all the green vegetables on the burger, which we know is not the case, or all of the iron in the burger, which that would be a lot of iron, or it's going through your digestive tract so quickly that you're actually seeing some not so great digestive stuff, and that's why it's green. All of those are very unlikely. It is most likely that there's blue dye in the bun or purple dye. And yes, blue dye does make your poop green, not blue.
Does Burger King admit that it does?
They have not responded to my request for comment, Ira. So
I wonder why that is. I mean, years ago when I found that if you crunch wintergreen lifesavers in the dark, they spark, and I called the lifesaver people, they would never admit that. Then they made a commercial about it 5 years later. But we'll have to wait and see that. Yeah. So these are the Halloween burgers, and this is something you can try at home.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You can try this experiment at home this year. Rachel, as always, thank you very much for being with us today. Rachel Feldman, writer for the Washington Post Speaking of Science blog. Now it's time to play Good Thing, Bad Thing. Because every story has a flip side. If you thought antioxidants were always good for you, it might be time to think again. A new study out in Science Translational Medicine found that loading up on antioxidants could be harmful, specifically if you have melanoma, in mice at least, because researchers found that when the animals took antioxidants, it boosted the rate at which their cancer cells spread. So before you consider downing vitamin C and E in large quantities, we're going to talk the good and bad of using antioxidants to prevent and possibly treat skin cancer. Joining me now is David LaFell. He is a professor of dermatology and section chief of skin cancer at Yale School of Medicine in New Haven. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you for having me, Ira.
So give us the good news.
Well, the good news is that we know that reactive oxygen species, oxidation molecules, can be neutralized under certain circumstances by antioxidants. And in fact, the body has an incredible system of producing its own antioxidants to help keep injury, for example, in the case of the skin, from ultraviolet radiation from the sun, under control. But as you pointed out, it's not necessarily the case that because something is good, a lot of something is better. And we have the melanoma study that you just mentioned that showed that large amounts of antioxidants can increase both the spread and invasiveness of melanoma. But we also have the study about lung cancer, which showed that vitamin A derivatives and vitamin E in large amounts were adverse.
So in trying to become healthier by thinking you're eating more antioxidants, and these are from supplements, that you really might be harming yourself.
Well, typically in dermatology with respect to skin, and who doesn't want to put something on their skin if they think it's going to make it better? You know, from the time of Cleopatra when she bathed in soured milk for the lactic acid, people have had this desire to put things on their skin to try to improve it. And the same is true with antioxidants, but there's really no evidence that topically applied antioxidants make a difference. And there is, however, some evidence that oral antioxidants can have some minor effect on the damage caused to the skin by ultraviolet radiation, but that's a long way from saying that it's going to reduce your risk of skin cancer.
So your advice here to people with skin cancer is?
Number one, make every effort to avoid the harmful effects of the sun, and that includes using sunscreen, wearing a hat, staying out during the peak hours. There is no antioxidant that I'm aware of that can reverse the injury caused by the sun.
Is this also for something like squamous cell carcinoma or all
right.
skin cancers?
Well, there's melanoma that we talked about, and then there's non-melanoma skin cancer, which includes basal cell cancer and squamous cell cancer. And then, to make things even more interesting, there are the precancerous growths called actinic keratoses. And there really isn't evidence that topical or oral antioxidants will have any meaningful impact on the development of those skin cancers. There was a study out of Australia recently about vitamin B3. That showed a 20% reduction in the incidence of non-melanoma skin cancer. But in the scheme of things, that really is insignificant compared to the benefits of avoiding the harmful effects of the sun.
All right. Some good advice for folks going outside in the sun and cover up. And SPF good, too? Taking
minimum of a SPF of 30 and reapply every couple of hours while you're active outdoors.
There you go. David LaFell is a professor of dermatology and section chief of skin cancer surgery at the Yale School of Medicine in New Haven, Connecticut. Well, thanks for being a guest on Science Friday today.
My pleasure.